fingers through and make a fist. Thank God no one ever needed to use them in the bar, my dad said. But the guys in Zori's day must have been rough if they were carrying these. He tossed me the weapon to try on. It was so big that I could almost slip it over my wrist and wear it like a bracelet. I imagined being grown enough for my hand to feel it. Not because I wanted to crack some skulls, but just to close my fist and feel that power, to join them in manhood. Just as powerful as the flesh and blood characters of McSorley's was the bar's history. I grabbed bar mops and wiped down tables under the eyes of Theodore Roosevelt, JFK, former New York Governor Al Smith, and a slew of other public figures of Irish heritage or Roman Catholic background or just plain New York stock whose framed portraits lined the walls. I hauled blocks of cheddar cheese up from the basement refrigerator for my father to load into the same 8-foot-tall 19th-century icebox old John had installed behind the bar when he opened McSorley's. The iceman stopped delivering in the middle of the 20th century, and although the icebox's ancient facade was preserved, its guts were converted to a refrigerator. Between tasks, I daydream, gazing at the ceiling, where Harry Houdini's handcuffs dangled a few feet from a medieval-style mace and a pair of Civil War-era shackles from the Confederate prison camp at Andersonville. I already knew better than to reach up toward the sacred turkey wishbones hanging from the busted gas lamp above the ale taps. With steel in his voice, my father told me that first Saturday he brought me to work. Those belonged to the neighborhood guys who fought in World War I and never came back. Nobody touches them. I scanned the newspaper clips and photographs and posters, absorbing the lore of heavyweight champs Jack Dempsey and Gene Tunney, Yankee legend Babe Ruth, and champion racehorses whose names and exploits might only still be remembered on the walls of McSorley's. John McSorley himself, with his intense, prideful eyes and white mutton chop whiskers, stared down at me from various paintings and snapshots. Reminders of his legacy were everywhere. Signs in the bar's front and back rooms reminded staff and customers to heed one of old John's original mottos, "Be good or be gone." While newspaper headlines from the day in August 1970 when female customers were first served at McSorley's marked the death of old John's other founding creed, "Good ale, raw onions, and no ladies." The object that I came to love most was a framed certificate, about the same size as the bar's yellowed replica of the Declaration of Independence, that honored my father's first 20 years of employment. It hung from a spot high on the wall, looking down on the taps where my dad spent the majority of his shifts, pumping light and dark ale, surveying the floor, and barking orders to the waiters. I would mouth the words on his certificate while watching him work. "Congratulations to McSorley's personable bartender, Jeffrey Bartholomew." The sentence was terse and not all that eloquent, and the document wasn't even correct. It recorded the beginning of my dad's career as 1973, when he actually worked his first shift in 1972. But it didn't matter. That piece of paper meant I was part of this place. McSorley's had been there for a century and a half. That was forever to me, and in my wide eyes, it seemed like the bar would last another forever. I got to occupy a sliver of that history. Chapter 1. The Company of Men. I had my father's Saturday routine memorized before I learned my multiplication tables. He'd roll out of bed around 9 a.m., 2 hours before the bar opened. I'd be ready long before then, waiting on our living room couch, pushing the last few frosted flakes around a bowl of cereal-sweetened milk until I'd hear him groan or sometimes fart from the other side of my parents' bedroom door. Moments later, he'd emerge and take his first knock-kneed, half-stumbling steps into wakefulness. Saturday was his hump day, the middle of his work week, and it meant one more grueling haul behind the bar before the relative calm of Sunday and Monday night. So as eager as I was to start bugging him about McSorley's on those Saturdays, I knew to wait, at least long.